lake. There were a few palm trees scattered here and there, the craggy mountains cradling the water, the sign about the water's current planted in the middle of the beach. He couldn't read it anymore, not in any of the languages they had posted, but he knew what it meant. The water, a transparent green, took on a deeper, bluer hue as he swam. He swam out until his sandals were two specks on the sand, his book a blur of blue. He enjoyed the feeling of his body exerting itself, helped on by the current. Words floated out to him, and he clung to them. Silence. Ocean. Enough. He should have told someone. He could have told that woman who had emailed him, for instance, the one with the sun. The thought of his last case was like a strand of hair tethering him to land, all that was left between himself and the open sea. He could go back and try again to email her. He had meant to write goodbye, and the word had come out wrong, a different word. He hoped she understood what he meant. If he stopped thinking of it, if he let the current carry him, the strand would break easily of its own accord. Think about something else, he thought. He closed his eyes. The sun created dark spots on the pulsing orange inside his eyelids. Sheila. The day he met Sheila. A Saturday. He'd left the lab early and had taken the first train he saw until the end and walked the rest of the way to the beach, sitting on the damp sand, brooding. A whole universe out there, so many things unknown. Why was he stuck in cages with the rats? Two girls were sitting next to him on a beach blanket. A blonde, a redhead. Two silly girls eating ice cream cones and laughing at him. The blonde was the bold one. She walked up to him.
Are you religious?
Not at all. Why? He glanced at her. Her cheeks were pink from the sun, or maybe she was blushing. Her hair was tied back in a band, but coming loose around her face in bright, fluttery pieces.
We were thinking you must be religious to be wearing that. Don't you have a bathing suit?
He looked down at himself. He was in his usual graduate student attire, long-sleeved white Oxford shirt, black pants. No.
Oh, I see. You're far too serious for the beach.
She said it lightly, teasingly. She had a strong white body. It hurt his eyes to look at it. Silly polka-dot bathing suit. He scowled at her.
You're making fun of me. Yes. Why? Because you're far too serious for the beach.
Her blue eyes were both affectionate and mocking. He couldn't make sense of that. She was making him dizzy. The ice cream was dripping down the cone in the hot sun over her fingers. He had the strangest urge to lick them. Why not, polka dots?
Your ice cream is melting, he said.
She licked the cone, then her fingers, one after the other, laughing at herself. He had taken her for a giggler, but her laugh came from someplace deeper. It rolled out into the air, taking up space.
Ice cream, he thought, giddiness rising up his body from the white soles of his feet. The secret to life is ice cream.
Her laugh rang in his ears and kept on ringing. He had hoped it would never stop. He was getting tired now. This treading water business was more exhausting than he had anticipated. There was more resistance in him than he'd thought there would be. Just stop moving, he thought. Let go. He opened his eyes. The current had worked fast. The sandals and book were gone now, blended into the shore. He felt his heart pounding. He calculated how far he was from the beach. He could probably make it back if he wanted to. And then what? Back to that small, increasingly circumscribed existence of seafood and short walks. Not a terrible life, but winding down. He didn't miss language anymore. He liked the concreteness of this new way of living, the briny taste of the crab he was eating, the shy, curious face of the girl serving it, the
the sand slipping through the toes of his sandals as he walked back to his bungalow, the feel of his breath tickling his nostrils as he meditated. It was as if the earth was holding him in its gaze, cupping his face in its hands. He felt it whispering to him, in a wordless language he had forgotten his whole life and only now remembered, speaking to him of a reality so vast he couldn't impart it to another human even if he had the ability to do so. He barely recognized himself in the mirror, the brown, careless, leathery face, the wild, much too bright eyes. Who was this man? He had accepted the simplicity of this life gratefully, but knew that soon he would not be able to understand even the most basic transactions. He would be forced to succumb to the only thing he feared: helplessness. The shore was a pale smudge in the distance. His book was out there, on the sand. He felt bereft without it. He had carried it with him through these last days. At first it was to forestall conversation, dipping his face into those pages he had written and could no longer read, but lately it had become like a friend to him. When he awoke in the night, disoriented and afraid, he turned on the light and through the thick bodies of the circling moths sought out its blue cover on his bedside table. It spoke to him without words, assuring him that he had lived. Perhaps a tourist would find it while out collecting shells. Perhaps it would change everything for her. His legs ached. He stared in the sunlight at the retreating wisp of shore until it seemed merely a trick of the eyes, an imagined oasis. Here, then gone. Of course, the body would resist its demise. Of course, this was how life was. How could he have thought otherwise? It was a lesson he'd learned again and again. No matter how carefully you planned or did your research, the unknowable things would rise up out of the deep and overturn everything. But that was what had drawn him in, wasn't it? The depths of what we don't know? Maybe he'd see Sheila again, her face, or some glimmer of her in another. Maybe he wouldn't. He looked around him at the wide sky, at the ocean that continued now as far as he could see. The water sparkled in the sunlight, dazzling his eyes, every molecule glistening in the radiant, polka-dotted world. He felt his limbs relax, his body melting beneath the beauty of it. Blue sky, blue water, and nothing else. The undiscovered country. "Look at it this way, Jer," he heard Sheila saying. "Now you're going to get some answers." He felt the curiosity beating through him at the thought of it, stronger than his heart. This is David Pitu. We hope you've enjoyed The Forgetting Time, a Macmillan audio production from Flatiron Books. This program was produced and directed by Robert Kessler. Executive producer, Laura Wilson. Recorded by Maddie Argyropoulos. Text copyright 2016 by Sharon Guskin. Production copyright 2016 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Hi, this is Laura Wilson, executive producer at Macmillan Audio, and I'm speaking with Sharon Guskin. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Laura.
How did you become interested in the notion of past lives?
It was very interesting, actually. I was working as a hospice volunteer soon after the birth of my second child. And, you know, when you're working with people who are dying, the question of what happens after you die is not, you know, it's not just sort of a concept. It's something very real and very pressing. And around this same time, I stumbled across this book by Tom Schroeder called Old Souls. And this book was about this scientist called Dr. Ian Stevenson, who traveled the world collecting data about these very young children who seem to have memories of previous lifetimes. And the cases just were mind-boggling to me, just incredible stories of young children who, from the time they could talk, they'd say, you know, my name is not Suzanne, my name is Hammam, and I used to live in this town with these people, and my husband's name is Farouk, and my daughter's name is Layla, and I want my family back. And then they would take these children to the families, to the places that they remembered, and the children would often identify things, identify people, or turn to a man and say, how could you remarry? You said you'd only love me. So there were just these enormously compelling cases, and I started to just think about, wow, you know, what if this were true? And it just raised all these questions for me about my own children and why they are the way they are. And one of them's afraid of these things, and the other one's completely different and attracted to completely different things. And so it all just started percolating in my mind, this idea of how our children are our children and related to past lives. And the book sort of came out of that.
The Forgetting Time definitely includes this idea of past lives, but it's also the story of people just coming to grips with very difficult things. A woman trying to help her son, who's having some strange problems that she doesn't understand. A man who learns he has dementia. What was it like for you to put your characters through their paces?
I was sort of with them as they went along. So I think I started out knowing that they were all desperate in some way. And I also knew that they were going on this journey and that they would sort of end up at a very different place, stronger and sort of with a different perspective. And I wasn't sure as I was going along, am I going to be able to write up to that? Am I going to be able to get there? You know, so it was sort of pushing me as a writer to say, can I become Denise as she develops a larger sense of reality? Can I become Anderson as he frees himself up and lets go? You know, can I become Janie as she sort of wakes up? And so it was interesting just to watch myself progress. And in the end, I hope it works. I certainly felt as if I was on the journey with them, and I was pushing myself to get to the places they needed to go.
How we think about death and what comes before and after life is clearly something that's very tied to our culture. Did writing the novel change the way you think about life and death?
Absolutely. When I started out, you know, I was fascinated with Dr. Stevenson and the cases, and I thought, well, this would make an interesting story for a novel. And I was just kind of curious more than anything. But after kind of steeping my mind in these cases and also meeting Dr. Jim Tucker and getting to know him a little bit and just realizing how deeply serious and cautious Stevenson and Tucker were in their work, it became pretty difficult to just discount it after a while. And I think there are other people. There's a blogger at Scientific American who said, you know, I'm a skeptic. I want to find some way to disbelieve this, but it's pretty difficult to sort of come up with a more plausible explanation for these cases. So that has kind of stuck with me, and I kind of ended up sort of raising questions for myself about, you know, is this something that could happen when we die, and what does it mean for the way we live our lives if this is true? And so I've been kind of following my own conclusions on that. But the book is really just asking the question is, you know, maybe this happens. What would it mean if this happens? And I think everybody can, and I hope they do, come to their own conclusions. And maybe their conclusion is, you know, I just think this is a fun story to read, and that's totally fine. Or maybe they go somewhere else with it. But I think that's kind of a private journey. But for me, absolutely, I ended up really having a much different sense of what reality is than when I started.
Are you an audiobooks listener yourself?
I do. We listen in the car with the kids, so we've listened to Roald Dahl and that sort of thing with the children to kind of calm them down and keep them focused on long car trips because, you know, it's very easy for them to want to grab for their electronic devices constantly. And we find that the audiobooks are just this beautiful way of sort of bringing everybody in the car together and getting them all focusing on literature instead of playing a game on a little device. And myself, for myself, I listen to, as well sometimes at home, often, actually, you know, it really helps me when I have to do things I don't like clean the kitchen or something, to just go off into this other world, and I kind of forget I'm doing kind of the dishes or whatever it is. So I have really enjoyed audiobooks in my life.
Thanks so much for talking with me.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.